were from these same lower strata. When we take note of our own religion, in which our jurisprudence is so rich and our philosophy is so rich, those persons that made this jurisprudence rich and those that made this philosophy so rich were not the affluent, resistant of mansions. They were from the lower strata.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله Dear listeners, welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. About the concept of patience, Imam Khomeini رحمة الله عليه said, Patience and forbearance is the burden of misfortunes on man. Make easy the difficulties and strengthen the will and resolution. Well, this speech of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi is about the worth of forbearance in difficulties. This category of patience is the greatest because it implies self-dignity, wide-mindedness, and progression. Man is naturally the subject of misfortunes that befall him unwillingly, while he has no ability to stop them. The best thing that such a man may practice in such states is to armor himself with steadfastness, without which man will surely collapse and become palatable bite of graves. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in his holy book, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم الذين إذا أصابتهم مصيبة قالوا إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون أولئك عليهم صلوات من ربهم ورحمة وأولئك هم المهتدون. Give glad news to the people who have patience and in difficulty, they say, we are the servants of Allah and to whom we shall all return. It is they who will receive blessings and mercy from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and who follow the right guidance. Surah Al-Baqarah verses number 155 to 157. Amir al-Mu'minin Ali alayhi salam said in that regard, if you practice patience, the destined calamity will befall you while you are rewarded. But if you lose your temper, the destined calamity will befall you while you are sinned. It is worth mentioning that patience that is described as nice stands for the steadfastness against the calamities such as loss of a dear person, usurpation of the wealth, and persecution of the enemy. That is what Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh told us about patience and perseverance in difficulties. I hope that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will bestow us this kind of patience in difficult situations and be pleased with us. Okay, until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's ruthless policies of land confiscation, illegal settlement and dispossession, coupled with rampant discrimination, have inflicted immense suffering on Palestinians, depriving them of their basic rights. However, Palestinian resistance has gotten stronger than before, and the Zionist thugs are getting weaker and weaker than before. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote horrific details of the traumatic humiliation of a group of Palestinian women experienced at the hands of Zionist regime troops has not only been a shocking episode, but also confirms the total absence of morality within the occupying forces. It is thus no surprise that the occupied territories have become a tinderbox of resistance against the Zionist regime's brutal military reign. And a manifestation of the strong determination of Palestinians to free themselves and liberate Palestine from the river to the sea. No people who value freedom and liberty will allow themselves to be subjected to ongoing barbaric onslaughts, murders, massacres, torture, and the humiliation of assault on the privacy at homes raided and forcibly reduced to rubble. The mobilization by the resistance to thwart and overcome Zionist state-sponsored terrorism is an admirable trait of the zeal and collective spirit of sacrifice by committed defenders of Palestine. Notwithstanding the heavy-handed thuggery by the illegal regime's blood-stained killers, they have had to retreat on numerous occasions, unable to overcome the spirited fight back by the resistance. The despair and frustration of the Zionist regime are clearly evident in the rhetoric of its right-wing racist leaders. It certainly points to their abject failure to consolidate the Zionist project despite a century of occupation of Palestine. We agree with UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese, who correctly points out that the oldest military occupation in modern history looks like a prison and works like a prison. About three generations of Palestinians have grown within its confines. There is an overwhelming sense of despair among Jewish citizens about the future of the Zionist regime. Many leading Zionists have in recent days become extremely critical and publicly described the regime as rotten to the core. Conscripts in the army have not only denounced the occupation, but also the numbers of refuseniks are growing by the day. Former head of the occupying forces, who was also in the top ranks of the notorious Mossad, Amiram Levin, has admitted the military has been weakened because reservists refuse to serve. Coupled with the strength and resolve of the resistance, who have not backed off despite the odds, it is clear that doom and gloom awaits the apartheid entity. Palestine Chronicle added, far-right elements within the Zionist regime, including war criminal Netanyahu, have consistently called for genocide of the Palestinian population on the back of applying the most horrific forms of ethnic cleansing. It is shocking, though, not surprising, given the impunity flowing from America's complicity in the mass incarceration of Palestinians that the Zionist regime continues pursuing settler colonial policies without any regard for its international obligations under the Geneva Convention. that there hasn't been any consequence to date from either the UN Security Council or the International Criminal Court at The Hague for what clearly are war crimes is due to the protection the regime enjoys from America. Though it sounds unease, blatantly outrageous, it illustrates double standards of the West in general and the US in particular. Global outrage, including internal dissent, demonstrates that notwithstanding unlimited resources at its disposal, Zionist propaganda has failed to conceal the ugly reality of the regime's state-sponsored terrorism. A major consequence, indeed, of mass incarceration of Palestinians and dispossession by illegal settlers is the regime's loss of support in the court of public opinion. It is true that hordes of Israelis are jumping ship, fully aware that it will sink in the not-too-distant future. Though the Zionist regime has been at pains to conceal information about suicides among its troops serving in the occupation army, media reports reveal that there has been a significant rise in the number of soldiers committing suicide. Hard-pressed to acknowledge reasons for this escalating phenomena of suicides, the Zionist regime attempts to downplay it to prevent a decline in the morale of troops deployed in various hot spots. However, it is clear that suicide is escalating because the occupation army is under severe pressure by the Zionist regime to enforce inhumane and barbaric policies against Palestine's civilian population, which include minors and elderly infirm people. The glitz and glamour of defending their homeland evaporates as soon as troops realize that mandatory service places upon them the burden of enforcing unjust laws. To refuse results in being disparaged as traitors, many who are unable to deal with personal convictions and emotional dilemmas opt out by resorting to taking their own lives. Suicide cases highlight an emphatic rejection of the much-vaunted false image of the IDF as a moral army. Resistance in the Gaza Strip and in the occupied West Bank has evolved into a potent united force. And to the shock and awe of the Zionist regime and its Western backers, an overwhelming majority of Palestinians support armed resistance, especially in the West Bank. The bravery and courage of the various factions of the resistance to use every means at their disposal to confront mindless Zionist terror has not only captured the imagination of solidarity activists across the world, it drives fear in the ranks of right-wing zealots. According to Palestinian Return Center, a new report by Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem exposed how on Monday, July 10th, 2023, at around 1:30 in the morning, dozens of masked Israeli troops with dogs stormed homes belonging to the extended Palestinian family of Ajloun in Al-Khalil and forced five women to strip in front of their frightened children. The report included testimonies from three women about their experience during the troops' invasion of their house and privacy and stealing their gold and money. The troops threatened 26 members of the Palestinian family who were home at the time and confined them to one of the apartments at gunpoint before they handcuffed three family members, one of them, a 17-year-old boy, blindfolded them and took them to another apartment. They then separated the remaining men from the women and children who were kept in the living room and searched them in a separate room. We'll be right back.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, good manner. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of good manner and to joke. In the Islamic teachings, we see that to joke or joking is one of the kinds or one of the characteristics of having a good manner. But what does it mean when we say to joke with someone or to have fun with someone? When we talk about the jokes, generally what we see in the society, mainly the jokes are made to hurt specific race, maybe specific nation, or it is for people. Maybe we put different names on the people, we make fun of them, we make joke. And even when we say a joke, it is generally hurting someone in some cases. And when we see all these things and we say that this is a part of the good manner or husn-e khulq, this contradicts. On the other hand, when we refer to the Islamic definition of having a joke, it means, or to joke, it means that it should not hurt others. It means that to joke in a way so that everyone becomes happy. So you make your brothers in iman, you make the people that are sitting next to you, they become happy. And that's what mizah or the joke in Islamic definition means. And when we look at the even narrations from the Prophet ﷺ, he says, "Inni la imzahu wa la aqulu illa haqqa." I do joke, I do say, make jokes, but I do not say except what is haq, what is truth. And this does not hurt other people. It makes people happy. And this is what we need to strive for. This is what we need to go for. If we want to have jokes or to make jokes, it should be in a way so that it does not hurt others' feelings. Rather, it makes them happy, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the good manner and to make jokes or to joke in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that in Islam, to joke is a part of husn-e khulq. It is part of good manner. Whereas we see that when Yunus Shaybani, one of the companions of the Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, came to him and Imam Sadiq asked him that how much you fun, like you have fun with your friends when you're sitting with them or you say jokes. He said very less. And the Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said that do not be like this. Why? Because to joke is a part of good manner, and with this you make your brothers happy, you make your people, the friends that you're seeing with them, you make them happy. On the other hand, when we look at the Prophet, obviously in his life, there are many stories. For example, once the Prophet was sitting on the dining table with his companions, and next to him, Imam Ali was sitting, and they all were eating some dates. And the Prophet, ﷺ, when he had a date, He put the seed of date in front of Imam Ali. So the rest of the companions, when they saw that the Prophet, every time when he picks up a date, he eats it, and then he puts the seed of the date in front of Imam Ali. They started to put all those seeds in front of Imam Ali. When they finished eating, Prophet said to Imam Ali that, "Oh Ali, have you eaten all these dates that were in front of us? Because you know all the seeds are in front of you." Then Imam Ali replied nicely and happily, and he said that, "Oh Prophet, pardon me, but I was eating dates and I putting the seeds away. But all of you have eaten the dates with the seeds." So this was a joke which was made by the Prophet and Imam Ali. And this is to make happy each other. There was no insult. There was no abuse in it. And this was something which has been taught by the Prophet and Imam Ali, that when you're sitting somewhere, if you want to have a fun, you can have such things which makes everyone happy and it does not hurt anyone, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Fires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
A recent visit by U.S. delegation led by Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Ethan A. Gorish to northeastern Syria has drawn outrage from Damascus. In a statement, the Syrian Foreign Ministry branded the entry of the delegation to the country's territory as unauthorized. The ministry categorically condemned the visit as what it called flagrant violations of Syria's sovereignty and a breach of international law and the United Nations Security Council resolutions. That after the delegation, led by Gorish and a military officer, met with commanders of U.S.-backed militant groups, including Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF, and tribal leaders earlier in September in the eastern province of Deir ez-Zor. The ministry said the delegation's meeting further exacerbated concerns regarding Syria's sovereignty and international legal principles. The ministry dismissed the delegation's claim that their visit was aimed at addressing issues faced by residents in Deir ez-Zor, calling it a blatant lie. It said the event underscores the hypocritical stance taken by U.S. administration. The Syrian Foreign Ministry stressed that U.S. is actively exploiting Syria's resources and capabilities while at the same time imposing unilateral economic sanctions, describing the measures as unjust, illegitimate, inhumane, and immoral. The ministry asserted that the U.S.'s blatant interference in Syria's domestic affairs, along with its extensive support for various terrorist groups and separatist militias, only serves to underline the destructive role played by Washington in the Arab country. The reaction by the Syrian government comes as U.S.-backed militant groups hold control to the east of the Euphrates River, while the Syrian government forces are positioned on the western bank. The United States also maintains military installations in the area, including the country's largest gas field, Alomar. The visit led by Gorish and a U.S. Army officer to Syria follows another trip by an American delegation to the country's northwest last month. The high-level delegation included three members of the U.S. Congress, Ben Klein, Scott Fitzgerald, and French Hill, all members of the U.S. Republican Party, who visited parts of Aleppo province with a claim of highlighting the ongoing humanitarian catastrophe there. But the interesting point about the U.S. delegation's recent trips is that all those visits were made to areas controlled by foreign-backed terrorists and not ordinary areas. The recent visits also come in the light of Washington's all-out support for foreign-backed militants there. For over a decade, the United States has left no stone unturned to provide financial and logistical support to the terrorists, including Daesh, with the aim of overthrowing the democratically elected president of Syria. Reports on the ground indicate that the United States has recently increased its support for the terrorist groups in parts of Syria controlled by foreign-backed militants. Testimony to that is the deadly terror attacks carried out by Daesh over the past months. The most recent incident occurred on August 10th when Daesh terrorists ambushed a bus in Deir ez-Zor province, resulting in the tragic loss of 32 Syrian soldiers. Concurrently, despite the existence of U.S. coalition-controlled camps in Syria, particularly Al-Hawl camp in Hasakah province, which functions as a primary detention and holding facility for Daesh terrorists, the activities of the terror group have surged. Some Lebanese media have cited Russian officials that the U.S. support for Daesh terrorists in certain areas in Syria has significantly increased. Maybe that is why the Secretary General of the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has talked of U.S. plans to revive Daesh in an effort to justify its role in the West Asia region. All what it is that U.S. intentions to provide as much support to the terrorists as it can are not secret to anyone. But the real intention is, as the Syrian government has numerously complained about, to plunder the country's resources, including its oil and gas reserves.
A recent video circulating on social media shows Israeli soldiers of the Army's Golani Brigade rioting during a training session in protest against the far-right Israeli cabinet of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's recent controversial policies. The leaked video shows dozens of soldiers from Israel's Golani Brigade shouting and vandalizing property. According to the reports, several of the protest participants had been disciplined by superiors, resulting in the arrest of several soldiers, including sergeants. The regime's Golani Brigade is mostly made up of elite soldiers specialized in ground warfare. They have carried out armed attacks against Palestinians and have participated in almost all the wars waged by the regime. Ever since the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced the proposal for the judicial overhaul, which limits the authority of the national judiciary, the public has held mass demonstrations across Israel. Tens of thousands of military personnel from different sectors of the Israeli army have protested against the decision, including 10,000 reservists from intelligence units and Air Force pilots. They have threatened to no longer show up for duty in protest of Netanyahu's judicial reform efforts. Last month, Israel's Air Force chief suspended a number of senior military reserve forces in the wake of ongoing demonstrations against Netanyahu's judicial overhaul plan. The development came a day after the Israeli Navy suspended two high-ranking reservists after they announced plans to end volunteer reserve duties, in addition to refusing to serve in what they called a dictatorship. Also, cases of suicide within the Israeli occupation forces have grabbed headlines recently, with observers blaming a mental health epidemic among soldiers. In July, Israel's chief of staff, General Herzi Halevi, warned that the army's unity has dangerously deteriorated due to the thousands of reservists who have threatened to hold service in protest against the judicial overhaul Israel faces. He also warned that Israel would be in existential peril. Some other Israeli military officials have warned that the reservists' protests are impacting military readiness amid heightened tension between Israel and the axis of resistance, including Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Hamas in recent months. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his supporters have rejected the reservists' protests as a dangerous and unprecedented form of political blackmail by the military, with some equating the protests to attempts at a military coup. Despite the threat of reservists refusing service, Netanyahu's far-right cabinet pushed ahead with the judicial overhaul legislation. The Knesset passed the legislation in a vote in July, despite months of large protests. The legislation struck down the ability of Israel's Supreme Court to veto legislation passed by the Knesset based on the criteria of reasonableness.
As the war in Ukraine lingers on, there are concerns among some Eastern European countries over possible peace talks between Russia and Ukraine. Eastern European countries are raising alarm over Ukraine potentially being pushed into peace talks with Russia. This amid hesitation and delays in weapons supplies to Kiev and waning public support. The countries bordering Russia and Belarus argue that international partners need to lay out a path for a decisive victory for Kiev. Some Republican presidential candidates, including frontrunner and former president Donald Trump, have called for the U.S. to directly negotiate with Vladimir Putin and relegate the war to a territorial dispute.
So we've been pretty consistent, actually, on all this. We need to end this war, no blank check. Europe needs to step up. And anything we do should be in America's national interest. You don't subcontract out your national interests to other countries. And I don't think it's been in our interest to be sending money to pay pensions for Ukrainian bureaucrats and salaries for Ukrainian bureaucrats.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has insisted that any deal must pressure Russia into a full retreat of Ukrainian territory and security guarantees. The concern comes amid calls in Europe to make some sort of a security agreement with Russia. French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna has said Western leaders will need to build a security architecture that respects Russia's interests when the conflict in Ukraine ends. Reality, history, and geography mean that this country is largely on the European continent. We will have to find a way to rebuild a solid security architecture that takes into account the stability interests of all. Colonna's statement does not mark a radical departure from French policy since the start of the conflict. French President Emmanuel Macron has held since last year that Europe should discuss, quote, how to give guarantees to Russia the day it returns to the negotiating table. However, both Macron and Colonna continue to endorse Ukraine eventually joining the NATO bloc, which Moscow would consider an unacceptable security threat. Meanwhile, Ukrainian lawmakers have overwhelmingly voted to relieve Alexei Reznikov of his duties as defense minister. He has earlier tendered his resignation after President Volodymyr Zelensky announced plans to replace the official. Reznikov had held the post since November 2021. During his tenure, the defense ministry was embroiled in several corruption scandals. Senior officials were accused of procuring food for soldiers at inflated prices and paying dubious firms for supplies. One recent scandal involved a regional conscription chief who was charged with obtaining millions of dollars in illicit funds.
The money which is stolen or could be stolen from the state budget, this money is stolen from the war effort. So it means to just take the soldiers on the front line. They do not receive necessary equipment or goods if the money goes somewhere else.
President Zelensky has appointed 41-year-old Crimean Tatar Rustem Umerov, who most recently led Ukraine's state property fund, to replace Reznikov. Experts have observed that the cabinet reshuffle is unlikely to lead to any major change in Ukraine's battlefield strategy. The dismissal comes amid Ukraine's ongoing counteroffensive against Russia. Ukrainian military officials claim their troops have made progress in the front line near the Zaporizhia region. Russian military officials have not commented on the claim, but they say Ukraine has lost a considerable number of troops and military hardware in the counteroffensive.
Yes, well, this counteroffensive has been much hyped for months before it even started. And I think it's fair to say that progress has been slower than hoped for by Kiev and certainly by some of its Western backers. It had a slow and sort of a rough start with a lot of Western equipment lost and Ukrainian lives lost. That's because the Russian defensive lines were really entrenched, very heavily mined, several layers deep.
Russian officials say Kiev's forces have lost more than 66,000 troops and over 7,600 heavy weapons since launching their push in early June. Defense Minister Shoigu says despite the colossal cost in manpower and equipment, the Ukrainian government continues its operation because it desperately needs to show some kind of success to its Western sponsors. Ukrainian officials have acknowledged that their counteroffensive was proceeding poorer than had been hoped and is being waged at a serious cost to the army.
Former head of Israel's Mossad spy agency has said the occupying entity enforces an apartheid system against Palestinians. The admission has been made by Tamir Pardo, who was the regime's spy master from 2011 to 2016.
Let's say there is a car accident between a car of a Jewish settler and a car of a Palestinian who lives in Hebron or Nablus. Each one of them stands before a different legal system, one under the military legal system and the other the civilian system. In a territory where two people are judged under two legal systems, that's an apartheid state.
Pardo becomes the latest former senior official to have concluded that Israel's treatment of Palestinians in the West Bank amounts to apartheid. That's a reference to the system of racial separation in South Africa that ended in 1994. Leading rights groups in Israel and abroad, as well as Palestinians, have accused Israeli occupation of the West Bank of morphing into an apartheid system. A handful of former Israeli leaders and diplomats have warned that Israel risks becoming an apartheid regime, but Pardo's language was even more blunt. Israel has been practicing an apartheid system against Palestinians, though far more brutally, since 1948. This is when, with the support of Western governments, Zionist terrorists claimed Palestine to be their homeland. Israel launched another war in 1967, occupying more Palestinian territory, such as the West Bank, including East al-Quds, that Palestinians want as the capital of their future state. Since then, Israeli apartheid authorities have created a judicial system that allows them to steal more Palestinian homes and land and dispossess them in order to make way for more illegal settlers. Rights groups have pointed to the discriminatory policies within Israel and in occupied East al-Quds, its blockade of the Gaza Strip, which has been ruled by the Hamas group since 2007, and its occupation of the West Bank.
Because the U.S. was the last pillar to fall, the last domino to fall in sustaining apartheid in South Africa, where it had to fall in line with everyone else. But during apartheid South Africa and the international campaign against it during that regime's tenure, the United States issued the most vetoes within the Security Council to protect apartheid there, to protect apartheid in Namibia and South Africa. And here we're seeing a similar pattern.
Meanwhile, it has been revealed that Israeli female soldiers have forced Palestinian women to strip naked in front of their children during a night raid on their homes. The revelation has been made by the Israeli human rights organization Beit Salam. According to the report, soldiers threatened to unleash dogs on the families if the women did not comply. Regime forces broke into the Al-Luni family's house in the early morning of July 10. Two female troops took the 53-year-old mother, her 17-year-old daughter, and the mother's three daughter-in-laws, all in their 20s, into the children's room where they were forced to undress. The incident happened in the city of Al-Khalil, while the Organization of Islamic Cooperation has strongly condemned the move. The OIC urged international bodies to put pressure on Israel to end its daily breaches of human rights in Palestine and to take legal action with the appropriate international authorities. a coalition of Palestinian resistant factions has strongly condemned the use of attack dogs by female Israeli soldiers to force Palestinian women to strip naked, calling for a revolution in response to the regime's degrading behavior towards Palestinians. The United Nations has also called for an investigation into the forced stripping of Palestinian women by Israeli soldiers. Additionally, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, has said that such incidents are absolutely appalling.
The United States is not just a bystander here. The United States is complicit and a pillar of Israeli apartheid in its provision on unequivocal financial, diplomatic, and military support, that but for that support, Israel could not sustain this regime.
Israel exerts overall control of the territory, maintains a two-tier legal system, and is building and expanding Jewish settlements. Furthermore, Israel has broken a 30-year record for the number of Palestinians unlawfully detained under the highly controversial administrative detention procedure. The practice allows Israeli authorities to detain Palestinians without charge or trial indefinitely. The number of administrative detainees is reaching 1,264, breaking the record of 1,108, which was set in March of 2003, during the Second Intifada.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
فدعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions in practical Tajweed rules held by IRB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. So I really, really welcome you all, and also our brothers here, Brother Ali Nasir and Hussein Ruhullah, Hassan Nasrullah and Fawad Haider. How are you? Salaamu Alaikum and welcome.
Wa alaikum salam, how are you, sir?
Fine, inshallah, Ruhullah.
Yes, sir.
I'm amazing, that's great. And Ali Nasir?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
Really welcome you. And Hassan?
Fine, sir. How are you?
And Fawad Haider?
Fine, sir.
Alhamdulillah. So we really welcome you all. So brothers and sisters, without wasting the time, inshallah, today we will move on to Ayah 115 and Ayah 116 of Surah Ali Imran on page 64 and 65. So, inshallah, we'll have a short explanation, plus the important tajweed rules, inshallah, will be mentioned, and we'll practice also the recitation with tajweed rules. So, ready?
Yes.
So, in the beginning, let's listen, everybody.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. وَمَا يَفْعَلُوا مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَلَنْ يُكْفَرُوهُ وَاللَّهُ عَلِيمٌ بِالْمُتَّقِينَ إن الذين كفروا لن تغني عنهم أموالهم ولا أولادهم من الله شيئا وأولئك أصحاب النار هم فيها خالدون.
Amazing recitation. That was nice. Now I'll read it once, listen, and then inshallah we'll have a short explanation. Allah Almighty says in Ayah 115 of Surah Ali Imran, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم, بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وما يفعلوا من خير فلن يكفروه والله عليم بالمتقين. In Ayah 116, Allah Almighty says, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَنْ تُغْنِيَ عَنْهُمْ أَمْوَالُهُمْ وَلَا أَوْلَادُهُمْ مِنَ اللَّهِ شَيْئًا وَأُولَئِكَ أَصْحَابُ النَّارِ هُمْ فِيهَا خَالِدُونَ. Right? So, وَمَا يَفْعَلُوا مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَلَنْ يُكْفَرُوهُ. Allah Almighty gives you this promise, okay? In the previous ayah, Allah Almighty was talking about the mu'mineen, right? يُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ وَيَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَيَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَيُسَارِعُونَ فِي الْخَيْرَاتِ وَأُولَئِكَ مِنَ الصَّالِحِينَ, right?
Yes,
so Allah Almighty was saying. So some of the attributes, some of the characteristics of the mu'mineen. Now in this ayah, Allah Almighty says, وَمَا يَفْعَلُوا, and whatever good they do, the mu'mineen, what? فَلَيْ يُكْفَرُوهُ. They will not be unappreciated. They will not go unappreciated for that thing, for that deed. Any single thing you do good, inshallah, you'll have the reward. Okay? فَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ خَيْرًا
يَرَهُ.
You will see it. يَعْمَلْ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ, the least amount of good deeds you do, يَرَهُ. You'll see it, right? And also, شَرْ, bad things, okay? Bad deeds, also you will see it. So Allah Almighty says, وَمَا يَفْعَلُوا مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَلَنْ يُكْفَرُوهُ وَاللَّهُ عَلِيمٌ بِالْمُتَّقِينَ. And if you want to do good things, there are conditions for doing good things to be acceptable. Okay? For Allah Almighty. Look, if you want to do good things and get them accepted, you must be with iman. You must have taqwa. These things are إِنَّمَا يَتَقَبَّلَ اللَّهُ مِنَ الْمُتَّقِينَ. Allah Almighty accepts from those who are with iman, with taqwa. Right? Inshallah, in the next ayah, in ayah 117, we'll learn about this, that whoever donates or whatever do good things, and they think of doing good things, okay? They think they are doing good things, but they don't have taqwa, what happens to them? In ayah 117, inshallah, next session, tomorrow, we'll talk about it. Right? So in this ayah, Allah Almighty says, whatever they do, the mu'mineen, they will not go. Right? In the next ayah, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَنْ تُغْنِيَ عَنْهُمْ أَمْوَالُهُمْ وَلَا أَوْلَادُهُمْ مِنَ اللَّهِ شَيْئًا. Guys, it is a certain thing that in the day of judgment, you will see whatever you have done in this world. Right? Bad deeds, you will be punished. The kuffar, the non-believers, whatever they have done, they will see the punishment in the day of judgment. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا, those who have disbelieved, neither their wealth nor their children will avail them, will benefit them, anything against Allah's punishments. Right? وَأُولَٰئِكَ أَصْحَابُ النَّارِ, they shall be the inmates of the fire, and they shall remain in it forever. So that's it. Inshallah, refer to the Tafasir books for more information. That was a short explanation, and that's not enough. For sure, you must learn more, inshallah.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا.
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
So, we'll mention Ali Nasir, Hassan, Hussein, and Fawad. We'll mention some tajweed rules, okay? Alright?
Yeah, yes.
And then, inshallah, we'll practice the recitation with tajweed rules. Ready?
Yeah.
So, وَمَا يَفْعَلُوا مِنْ خَيْرٍ. The very first thing we have to mention is the pronunciations of the letters. عَيْن, وَاو, خَا, وَاللَّهُ, هَا, يَكْفُرُوهُ, هَا, عَلِيمٌ, عَيْن, بِالْمُتَّقِينَ, Nothing important. Next ayah, inna alladhina. What letter?
Dal.
Dal. Good job, good job. Lan tughniya anhum. Ayn an ha. Amwaluhum ha again. Wala awladuhum ha. Shay'a hamza. Wa ulaika. Wow and hamza. Ashab. Saad.
Ha. And ha.
Ha. Ha, right? Ashab ha. Good job. Ashabun nari. Hum. Ha. Fiha khalidun kha. So these letters are important. That's the first point. Pay attention to them. Wama yaf'alu. There is a long vowel with mim. Wama yaf'alu. There is a waw here. Min khayrin. Min khayrin. We have nun sakin. And whenever we have a nun sakin, a tanween, there are four important tajweed rules that one of them must be applied, right? So here we have nun, but based on the next letter that comes right after that nun sakin or tanween, we have to apply one of the rules. So kha matches throat letters, and throat letters are
from
for idhar. So we apply the rule idhar, which says basically
no changes.
Just read it the way nun is pronounced. Min khayrin. Min khayrin. But khayrin, kha has a fatha plus ya. This is called madlin. Ay sound. Khay, khay, ay. With a heavy sound. Khay, right? Rin has a tanween plus the next letter is fa. Fa matches.
Rest.
Ikhfa, rest of the letters. We hide the sound of the tanween. Khayrin. Plus two counts, nasal sound. That's it. Khayrin. Falan yukfaru. Falan. Who can say this?
This is Idgham.
Noon sakin plus ya. Ya matches.
Yarmalun
letters. In Yarmalun letters, we apply the rule.
Idgham.
That's it. Easy and simple. So, فَلَن يُكْفَرُوا. When you stop, ha changes to sukun. Yeah, the harakat of ha changes to sukun. فَلَن يُدْغَام with غُنَّة, with nasal sound, and stretch it for two
counts
or two beats. That's it. وَالْقِلَى tells you,
better
to stop, but still continue. Yeah, you can continue. وَاللَّهُ عَلِيمٌ بِالْمُتَّقِينَ. عَلِيمٌ. Tanween plus ba, ba matches iqlab. Change the sound of tanween to a hidden meme sound. Ikhfa of meme. Alimun bil muttaqin. That's it. Inna alladhina. Inna. Nun mushaddad. Nasal sound. Inna alladhina kafaru. La. Like khayrin. Fala yukfaru. Ikhfa. Hide the sound. La tughniya anhum izhar, no changes. Amwaluhum wala awladuhum wala, there is a mad, it's not wajib, but you still can stretch it for 6 counts, 4 counts, 5 counts. Wala awladuhum mim sakin plus min Allah mim sakin. Mim sakin plus mim?
Idgham mithlin.
Amwa awladuhum min Allah. Allah is pronounced heavily. Shay'an is changed to Shay'a. Then when Fatha changes to Alif Mad. And Sila tells you, just the opposite of Qila, right? Sila tells you, better to?
Continue.
Good job. Sil. Connected. Wa ula'ika, the Mad is wajib, we have said it many times. Ashabun nar nun mushaddad. Hum fiha khadidun. That's it. So, Jim tells you what? Ashabun nar. It is jayz. Either you can continue, you stop, whatever you want.
Yes.
Now, we've mentioned the rules. 1 minute we got. I'll recite. Make sure you repeat, inshallah, after me. Our brothers and sisters will also practice. All right?
Yes.
Good job. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
وَمَا يَفْعَلُوا مِنْ خَيْرٍ فَلَنْ يُكْفَرُوهُ
وما يفعل من خير فلن يكفروه
والله عليم بالمتقين
والله عليم بالمتقين
إن الذين كفروا لن تغني عنهم أموالهم ولا أولادهم من الله شيئا
إن الذين كفروا لن تغني عنهم أموالهم ولا أولادهم من الله شيئا
وأولئك أصحاب النار هم فيها خالدون
وأولئك أصحاب النار هم فيها خالدون
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
ما شاء الله That's it from us for today in this lesson. Allah bless you inshallah brothers and sisters. Thank you so much for being with us. Fawad Hassan Hussein Ali Nasir, thank you so much. Allah bless you, inshallah. Thanks to IRIB English Radio, Sevier International Schools for cooperation. See you in the coming sessions. Stay with IRIB English Radio. Walhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iraq says it has started relocating terrorist groups based in its Kurdistan region as part of a security agreement with Iran.